Welcome to Dome Patrol Premier League.
Hello everyone and welcome to the final Dome Patrol United Premier League podcast of the season. Well, it's been a strange season this year. We've ended it on the 26th of July, which is the latest that a Premier League season has ever ended. Now, usually what's happening at this time of year is the teams in the Premier League are going through their pre-season training and getting ready for the start of the season, second weekend in August. Obviously, that's not happening now. We are now Premier League free until the 12th of September, which, ironically, is the same weekend that the NFL starts. So, joining me this week, Ben unfortunately can't join me again. He's working a shift this weekend. So, to talk about the madness that was the last day of the Premier League, although madness is probably a bit over the top. It wasn't quite as exciting as everybody had hoped. I've drafted in my emergency loan, friend of the show, Chris Coy. Chris, welcome to the Dome Patrol United Premier League podcast again. How are you doing, my friend?
Hello, Mr. Baker. Yeah, very well. I'm live. You'll be sad to know. Yeah, I'm still alive. I'm still here. Still
yeah, you nearly died a couple of weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much. A bit of a strong man flu that come on. I was in hospital for about 7 or 8 hours. Just really bad breathing problems and had a real bad few weeks, really bad 3 or 4 weeks. And then after that, obviously the wife's due very soon. So she's been through the wars as well. So big shout out to Catherine for A, putting up with me, B, putting up with our child, and C, putting up with all the stuff that she's got going on as well. So she's just come out of hospital after 5 days. So it has been a very, very eventful month. Oh, how have you been? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah, mate. All good here. No illnesses, no hospital trips. Nothing quite as dramatic as what's going on in the Coy household. All good, mate. It's a weird old feeling that the Premier League season has ended on the 26th of July.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I think this season was just all about, you know, the fairness of finishing the league. I think it was just a case of get it finished, no arguments, get the relegation, Champions League sorted, reevaluate the safety, reevaluate the whole system, really, because I think a lot's going to change over the next couple months with, you know, transfers and stuff like that as well. So just a case of get it done, yeah, get out the way, move on, and you know, just talk that fans might be letting that might be filling like a third of the stadiums in October now. That's what they're looking at. So we'll see what happens from now on. Yeah,
they had a test event down at the Oval in London today at the cricket, and they let 1,000 people in for a Surrey Middlesex cricket match today as a pilot event. The government wanted them to test it. Friend of mine and yours, Chris Elliot, is quite well connected at Surrey Cricket Club, so he was there today and sent me a couple of pictures of the stadium and stuff like that. So yeah, I think we are on course to start getting fans back in the stadium in October, as long as there is no kind of massive second spike or, you know, local lockdowns, for instance, that may stop that. I mean, it'll be good to get fans back in the stadium. It's not the same. Not the same at all. I haven't enjoyed that element of the restarted season, but I have quite enjoyed the summer football. That's been interesting. I mean, usually we get a tournament, which, you know, but this is summer club football. And it was quite nice to have football on every day for 2 months. I think it was, wasn't it? Roughly 2 months.
Yeah, it was sort of had like a bit of a World Cup feel to it. You know, like these games that come thick and fast, and you wake up in the morning and you got, you know, 4 games that day, and a bit of a, what they call a bit of a festival of football, really. But no, I mean, I really didn't enjoy the viewing experience watching it. You know, I was sat there the other day watching the game. I was like, what does this feel like? This reminds me of something. I've felt this before. And it reminded me of, like, the late nights playing FIFA on the PlayStation and you're 7-0 down with 4 minutes to go, knowing you're not going to win. But you don't want to rage quit because then you're going to look like an idiot and you'll lose loads of FIFA points and stuff. That's how I felt watching the games. I was just staring at the telly going, I'm not really that bothered anymore. Just finish. Maybe that's because it's Everton fan as well. There's nothing to watch with Everton.
Yeah,
we'll come, horror show.
We'll come to Everton in a bit when we're discussing the mid-table teams at the end of the show.
Yeah. Oh God. So, thanks for that.
Yeah, no problems, mate. I'm only jesting. So look, season's over, so it's time to do a bit of a review. We'll go top, bottom, and then middle, like I said. So top of the table. We discussed it the last time we spoke. We don't need to go over it again. They won the league. Clearly the best team in the league this year, as annoying as it is to admit. City were guaranteed to be second fairly early on in the restarted season. But then today you had the teams in third, fourth, fifth and sixth playing against each other, with three of the teams, United, Man United, Chelsea and Leicester, having the opportunity to get into the Champions League or the top four for next season. Wolves couldn't make it, but you know they could have had a big say in the outcome because they were playing Chelsea. We spoke before we were having a text message conversation or WhatsApp conversation before the games this afternoon, and I said, and I think you agreed, that the top four would end up being United in third, Chelsea in fourth, Leicester in fifth.
Yeah.
And that's what it turned out to be. United were away at Leicester. It was a pretty nervy, sloppy game from both teams, I think it would be fair to say. Leicester have got a lot of injury problems. United have looked nervous and tired for the past week or so. But United snuck home in the end with a 2-0 win. Penalty with 20 minutes to go. That was an absolute nailed-on penalty. And then goalkeeper mistake at the end, and Jesse Lingard made it 2-0. What do you think, talking about Man United, I'm going to be a bit selfish here for a bit. When the restart started, they were playing the best football, scoring goals, creating chances. And all of a sudden, that stopped happening. What do you think? I mean, I've got a theory as to why I think it was, but I'd be interested to hear a neutral's kind of thought on why United's form dipped so dramatically in the last 2 weeks.
I think since the start of lockdown, for me, apart from Chelsea, who are kind of back to have a really good restart, United have probably been the most impressive side I've watched, to be fair. I thought they've over the course of the whole, maybe not the last 2 weeks necessarily, but over the course of the whole programme of games, I think United have done really, really well. Now, I have obviously been a bit off the mark the last 4 weeks with being sick and stuff like that, so I've tried to keep an eye on games as much as I can. But maybe the last couple of weeks, I've seen a couple of youngsters come into that side as well. Was it Williams, the left back?
Yeah, Luke Shaw. Luke Shaw's been injured. Yeah.
Okay, so Ollie's obviously introducing a lot of these young, there's a lot of young players coming through the Pogba, Fernandes, Matic situation in midfield. You've got three, powerhouse midfielders there that just need to find a way as well and settle into that sort of role, whose role's which and things like that. I did make a little note on the Manchester United game today, actually, about body language. I keep an eye on Pogba when he loses the ball or no one passes to him. He does get a little bit stroppy. It's interesting to see who the leaders are that United have got. I think that'll be really important for them next year. But you're always going to... They've been in such good form. You're always going to get a little dip, James, and I think it wouldn't be too hard on United. I think they've done fantastic, and you should be proud of the season you've had, really, considering.
Well, yeah. No, you're right. January the 22nd, we lost at home to Burnley, and it was all doom and gloom. We were 14 points behind Leicester with a goal difference that was 21 worse. So in 14 games, we've made up more... We've 18 points more. So we ended up 4 points ahead of Leicester. And our goal difference is now four better. So we've turned around a 14-point deficit and a 21-point goal difference in 14 games to end up coming third. I mean,
yeah,
I,
and that's also.
Yeah, carry on, mate.
Sorry, I was going to say that's not just down to maybe how impressive United have been, but how poor Leicester have been as well.
You know, they fell off a cliff.
They've been awful. So they've let the door wide open for you, yeah, but I'd say you've still got to walk through it, which you did.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's tiredness that's crept in because he's kept the same 11 players starting almost every single game. Especially in the league, it's been the same 11 players. And, you know, having 4 months off that the players did, or 3 months off, or whatever it was, to then come in and then have to play that many games in a short space of time in the summer, it's bound to have an effect.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, as you say, it's that match fitness. And I think it was on the radio I was listening to the other day. They were talking about, I think it was Ray Parler on the Sports Breakfast on Talk Sport. He was talking about, you know, as you get older, the games come thick and fast. Your knees the swelling doesn't reduce over the days that you're in between games. So you find it harder the next game and, you know, build up lactic acid in the muscles, they get hamstrings. And so it has been, you know, fair play to the players. The intensity hasn't been as good or as intense as what it normally is. But, you know, the fit, when players are fit, you know what I mean, and they can handle them sort of games and the short gaps. But no, as I say, I've been really impressed with United. And I've seen today as well one of your old players, Fellaini, and one of Everton's old players, Fellaini.
Yeah, scored a hat-trick of headers
today. Yeah. Well, that deserved a little shout-out for old Marouane.
Playing in China. Thank you for whatever Chinese club he plays for taking him off our hands. United fans will be eternally grateful. The second game then that could have affected the top four was Chelsea at home to Wolves. Chelsea won that fairly easily by the sounds of it. Two goals just before half-time. So the top four and the qualifiers for the Champions League, Liverpool is the champions, Man City, United and Chelsea. So that's your top four. I think quite a few people maybe would have predicted that to be the top four at the start of the season. I think you may be able to replace Chelsea with Spurs from the pre-season predictions.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the league table doesn't lie after 38 games. I mean, normally, your top four teams are your top four teams. And I've got no arguments with that being the top four teams of this season, easily.
Yeah. So from the top, let's go to the bottom. So as it stood before the Premier League games today, Norwich were already relegated. They were relegated a few weeks ago. So what was left was three teams to go into two places. So you had Watford away at Arsenal, Bournemouth away at Everton, and Aston Villa away at West Ham. Now, Aston Villa had the advantage of a three-point gap to Watford. No, it wasn't a three-point gap, was it? I can't remember now. No, they were level on points. They were level on points, yeah. And Aston Villa had a slightly better goal difference by one, is how it turned out to be. So basically, Aston Villa needed to match whatever Watford did to stay up. And Watford were 3-0 down away at Arsenal. I managed to bring that back to 3-2 and missed a couple of sitters that could have made that game 3-3. Bournemouth, Chris, we'll let you talk about this one in a second, but Bournemouth won 3-1 at Everton. Was it 3-1 in the end? I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3-1. Yeah.
And then Aston Villa got the point they needed away at West Ham, who'd already secured their safety the week before. But that was tense because one more goal in that Villa-West Ham game for West Ham and Villa losing, then Bournemouth would have stayed up at the expense of Aston Villa. So I can't say there's many surprises in the teams that went down. Watford maybe surprised me slightly. I mean, I think I picked Bournemouth, Norwich and Brighton to go down this year. I think were my three that I picked. Your thoughts?
Yeah, where do we start? I mean, I'll start with Bournemouth-Everton. Bournemouth needed to, they had a bit of a goal difference to turn around as well. Bournemouth, as well as trying to catch Villa, so they needed to win by a couple of goals. So perfect time to play Everton if you need to win by a couple of goals, it seems, because we've just been absolutely, give up. I really don't know where to start with Everton. Ancelotti's got a massive job on his hands next year, turning this team around. And I don't know. I think I'm being optimistic to think it'll happen a year. I think he needs two. I think he needs four transfer windows to kind of filter out what's going on at Everton.
You're gonna have money to spend this summer.
Well, I don't think we have, you know, because I heard somewhere the other day that we're still paying off like contracts for like Koeman and people like that, and we've got players like Sigurdsson and Walcott, and these players on like 100 plus, 120, 130 k a week. We went in proper two-footed into it, you know, a couple of years back, and we've had like five managers since, and it's just there's no stability. They've lost the identity. The problems are so layered that I could do a whole 3-hour special on Everton's problems, to be honest with you. It's that deep, I think, and I don't think people realise how deep it actually is. I think we're kind of glossing over it a little bit, but fair play to Bournemouth. They're always a bit of a bogey side for us, especially away. I think we've got a really good record against them at home, but away we struggle against them. I do like Eddie Howe, Boyle Debertonian as well. It's got a lot of time for him, but I think their luck's run out eventually. I think they've been treading water for a bit too long now. And they've had a fantastic run. I mean, I think they came from like really lower league, didn't they? Didn't they come from
came all the way from League Two? You know, they nearly went into the non-league in 2009, I think it was, maybe even later than that.
Yeah, exactly. So Eddie Howe, hats off to him. I mean, I heard on the radio this morning about some of the money that they'd spent on players, you know, like Solanke and players like that. Bournemouth, and I thought, they're paying a lot of money for him. And then I thought to myself on the way home, you watch today, you'll score against Everton, because whenever you're having a bad run or you haven't scored for 3 years or 4 years, come and play at Goodison and you'll score. It's always the way, and he did today. So ended up 3-1. I was going to watch the Villa game, but I cancelled my BT Sport ages ago. So, and that was on, I was a bit gutted that wasn't on Sky. It was one of the main games, because they had eight games on Sky and that wasn't one of them. And that's probably the game of the day.
It probably did turn out to be the most nervy and exciting game of the day, especially the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, maybe with the TV deal since the lockdown and stuff, they've had to share out the games. That's why maybe other channels have got more, like Amazon, things like that. I watched them Sheffield United on Amazon. So, yeah, as for what... So, I'm made up Villa stayed up, by the way. Really, really happy Villa stayed up. I think they need to look for a striker first next year and maybe potentially keep Grealish or cash in on him and use that money to reinvest if he wants to go somewhere to play in European football. Watford, I wrote down Pearson, what happened? ? Because to me, how bad does Sutton have to get that can't be glossed over for two games? Do you know what I mean? What's gone on there?
Do you know what? It's almost as if they kind of expected relegation and thought, let's get our manager changed before it happens. Short turnaround into next season, get a new bloke in. I know that's odd and it sounds weird, but it's almost as if they accepted they were going to get relegated when they sacked Pearson.
I think it's a case of, you know, if you've got two games to go and you change your manager, that you normally you need like 8 to 10 games to get a bit of a lift from a new manager, don't you?
Yeah.
They've pressed the panic button. Obviously, something's been said that is that bad that they can't gloss over it or just agree to disagree. Something must have gone on there to be sacked outright like that. You know, it's got to be quite serious. But apparently these owners have got a bit of a habit of doing this. I'm sure they own Marseille, and I'm sure there's someone else that they own as well.
Udinese.
And I think Udinese, yeah. So I think over time there's been quite a few instances of, like, you know, sackings and stuff, or quite, you know, you know, quick fire decisions when the crisis time's looming, so to speak. So I don't know what's happened at Watford, but if I had to pick Watford or Villa to go down, I'm made up Villa stayed up and Watford went, because I think Villa have got, you know, I just prefer Villa as a club, really, than Watford. No disrespect to Watford, but I was happy in the end that the relegation went the way it went, especially with Leeds coming up. Leeds and Villa back in the Prem is brilliant.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a shame Forest didn't make the playoffs as well.
Yeah, oh, that was they were close, weren't they?
Well, they needed an 8-goal swing. They were in the playoffs, and Swansea needed an 8-goal swing to get into the playoffs at Forest's expense, and got that 8-goal swing.
Wow!
Last game of the season, yeah.
And then they were playing tonight against Brentford, where you completely bottled that. I think it was 0-0 last time I looked. But yeah, I made up that Leeds next year. I made up that Villa back and staying in the Prem. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. So, right, that's the top and the bottom done. You've discussed that you think there's some issues going on at Everton. There's one team that, if Ben was here, we'd probably spend quite a long time talking about. We're not going to spend too long talking about it. But obviously, Ben supports Arsenal. Now, to be fair to Arsenal, they did have a week where they had two really good results. They beat City in the FA Cup semi-final, and they beat Liverpool in the league. Bearing in mind that is a Liverpool that had already won the league, and it didn't really mean anything to them other than chasing the 100 points that they missed out on in the end ever so slightly. I would argue that Arteta has actually taken Arsenal backwards since he's taken over. Ben would not agree with me, I don't think, and he's happy with what Arteta's doing. When Arteta took over, they were 2 points behind United in the league. They've ended 10 points behind United in the league. Now, everybody craps on Solskjaer for not being a great manager and blah, 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 right? To me, Arteta has taken Arsenal backwards, and I don't see how he is going to be the man to get them back into the top four, my opinion.
I think, well, you know, you're talking like they're following, you're talking on from a time when Arsenal United had Wenger and Ferguson. I mean, how'd you go forward from them to anywhere's backwards from that? I think you'd be, I mean, I know we have banter about Arsenal and you wind Ben up and stuff like that, but I do think you'd be a little bit unfair to say, you know, Arteta's taken them backwards because, you know, the manager that they had before Christmas was awful. I forgot what his name was.
Emery.
Emery, yeah. Unai Emery. Then the COVID struck and Arteta got sick, and then they've come back into, you know, a bit of unrest with some of the players' attitudes that Arteta's flagged up. There's a lot of rebuilding to do at Arsenal, and I think it runs deeper than just what's on the pitch with clubs like Arsenal. I think you've got to look at the youth structure coming through. You've got to look at the transfer policy. You've got to look at the how much the ground's costing them still. You've got to look at the attitude on the pitch. You've got to look at, you know, attitude and training. I think Arteta has come in because the fans will probably be a little bit more patient with an Arteta than they would do with an Emery because of that Arsenal legend connection as being a player. And I think that goes for Solskjaer and Lampard. It's quite, you know, the irony of seeing United, Chelsea and Arsenal, three big, massive clubs in England who've got ex-players now as managers who are trying to rebuild after success with Mourinho, Wenger and Ferguson. Them three clubs have gone back to former players, and I don't think there's any, you know, there's a connection with that and there's a reason why that's going on. So I think give Arteta a year, you know, he's worked under Guardiola. That can only do, you know, that can only do you no harm working under him.
Do you see them making up the points? Because look, let's Chelsea have already.
I don't think that's their target though, James. I don't think that's their target.
A club of Arsenal size should be aiming for the top four. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But so, you know, he's in the top four now. Chelsea have already improved and spent money. United are going to spend money and improve. City are going to bend like you've never seen. Okay. They finished how many points behind Liverpool? 36 points. No, it's more than that. 43 points. 43 points behind. Sorry, there's some quick maths going on in my head there. 43 points behind Liverpool, and they finished in eighth place. If Lampard would have finished in eighth place this year, he'd have been sacked. Now, granted, he had the whole season. Arteta didn't, so I'll give him that one. Solskjaer, if he'd have finished eighth this year, would have been sacked. Mourinho, if he'd have finished eighth with Tottenham, he'd probably leave.
Yeah, I do know what you're saying. It's been a very, very, very poor season for Arsenal. Like, the lowest league position they finished in that since I can remember anyway. Probably going back to pre-Wenger, I'd imagine.
First time they finished lower. First time they finished out of the top six since Wenger took over.
Okay, and you know, sometimes you just got to say, yeah, you know what, maybe Arsenal aren't ready to make a push for that top four yet. Maybe Arsenal need to accept the fact that they're in a rebuilding process and a lot of work needs to be done, and they should be happy next year hitting sixth and fifth, and that's an improvement on this year. As long as they're with Chelsea have got the squad that Chelsea have got an instant respect for Lampard and an instant sort of respect for Chelsea. You can see that they want to play and they want to be there. Some of these Arsenal players, I don't see that same attitude with that love for Arsenal.
Yeah. So on the flip side of the point I'm making, I'm going to make my own counter argument here. Arsenal win the FA Cup. Is that then a good season for them because they win a trophy?
Of course it is. Any season you win a trophy is a good season. So you say, okay, they finished eighth. Arteta's not come out and tried to, you know, like gloss over this. He's come out and said in interviews, look, this is not good enough. This is not good enough for Arsenal Football Club, and I'm not having it. You know, if you want to play for this club, you play. If you don't, ta-ra, see you later. Pack your bags. That's fine. So to do this and then go and win a trophy, it's like, well, yeah, any club would take that. You know, that's like the fourth time they've won it since, what, 2012? So, and they won it like four times since then. Wouldn't this be the fourth?
So. I think this will be the fourth time they've won it since 2012 if they do go ahead.
I think since it got sponsored by Emirates, they've won it every year. It's funny, that, isn't it?
Yeah, funny. Right, that's enough on Arsenal. Next time we record, I'll give Ben his forum to mount his own defence. Right, so before we go on to next season, there's just a couple of things we need to cover. Obviously, the Golden Boot, so top goal scorer, was won by Jamie Vardy this year with 23.
Yeah, quite low, that, isn't it, for a Golden Boot winner?
Mm.
Isn't it 23? Yeah. Isn't that I wonder if that's like the lowest Golden Boot winner in the last 20 years?
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, fair play to Jamie Vardy. I think, you know, he's made himself a decent little career since he signed for Leicester, considering he didn't join the top level of football until he was, how old was he? 27, I think, was when he, 26, 27?
Yeah, come up from non-league, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. So last year, amazing achievements.
Yeah, last year it was shared by three people. It was shared by Aubameyang, Sadio Mane and Salah, who all scored 22 last year.
So it was only last year that it was lower than that.
So Vardy won it with 23. The season before, Salah won it with 32. Season before, Kane won it with 29. So yeah, 22 and 23 have been the lowest since Carlos Tevez and Dimitar Berbatov shared it with 20 in 2010. Yeah.
That was when United were dying out, really, wasn't it, with Berbatov? Was that when he was there then?
Yeah, so Tevez was playing for City and Berbatov was playing for United. And then before that, Anelka won it in 2009 with 19.
Wow, okay. Okay. So, yeah, so about 10 years. Well, take last year out of the equation. Yeah, about 10 years since. Well, like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
It just shows you as well, when you look at like Cristiano Ronaldo and you think he's scoring like 48 or 50 in a season. It's like, are they that good, or are the teams they're playing like not that good?
I think it's the latter. I mean, I think it's some of the former, but mainly the latter. You can't tell me that the strength of the Italian and the Spanish leagues, the strength in depth of all their teams, is the same as the Premier League.
Do you know what's really funny about that, though? We say that, and then you end up like you look at La Liga. Like, as an Everton fan, I'll look at La Liga and I'll be like, right, okay, oh, we've got Villarreal in the Europa League. I'll batter them. I mean, and then Villarreal come over and do like 4-0 at home. You're like, oh, they're really good. They're actually really good, or are we really bad?
Yeah, but
so
Villarreal,
like, some teams like Seville and teams like that, who won like the Europa League 3 years on the bounce. So
they'll be the fourth best team in La Liga, whereas Everton, no disrespect, might be the 10th best team in the Premier League. But if you were to play the 10th best team in La Liga, I would back Everton to beat the 10th best team in La Liga.
I wouldn't back Everton to beat Accrington Stanley at the minute.
Let's change Everton as our team to compare to. But you get my point, though. You get my point.
Yeah.
And then there's two more, actually. I'm going to throw a surprise one in on you in a minute. The Golden Glove award for the most clean sheets looks like it was won by Edison, the Manchester City goalkeeper.
Kept
a clean sheet today. So I think he did that with 16 clean sheets out of 38 games, which is not bad. He was injured for some games, I think, as well. I'm going to chuck a second question at you now. So there's two things left, right? Your manager of the year and why.
Okay. Have I got to answer that now, or are you going to ask the second question as well?
All right, okay, so I'll ask the second question then. Is Jordan Henderson won the Football Writers Player of the Year, which is done by the journalists, okay?
Yeah.
I don't believe he was the best player in the Premier League this year. I believe it was Kevin De Bruyne.
But
if you had a vote in that award, who would you have voted as your Player of the Year? So your Manager of the Year and your Player of the Year.
Okay, well, Manager of the Year, I'd have to go with Klopp. Sheffield United manager being a very, very close second. But I think Klopp deserves 1 year as the Manager of the Year, because I think the way that side he's built there has been, you know, it's been brilliant. Been really, really good to watch, and they deserved it. So, yeah, I go with Klopp for Manager of the Year. I was actually thinking about this other question the other day, actually, when I heard it on the radio that Jordan Henderson had been given the Player of the Year. And my first thought in the car was, well, yeah, it's probably natural to give the Player of the Year to the captain of the league-winning team. Why wouldn't you do that? And then I thought, well, hang on. Roy Keane, back in the Man United days as captain, might not have been Player of the Year in that team. Beckham, Scholes could have been far better, but because he's the captain, he's automatically seen as the best player in that team. So that was a good point you make, actually, because I thought De Bruyne as well. I thought De Bruyne had a fantastic season.
Have you seen his goal today yet?
No, I haven't seen his goal today. My mate beat me in the fantasy league. I've seen how many points he had. He had like 48 for De Bruyne, which actually killed me off. So he must have been doing something today.
Wait till you see his goal today. It is pretty good.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, Jordan Henderson is not a glamorous pick, is he?
No,
he's not. But this is a guy that's captained the team to the Champions League last year and the league this year, you know. So he's done something that Steven Gerrard couldn't do. And that was captain of Liverpool side the title, right? So he's got to be seen in some kind of high accolade, Henderson, for what he's achieved. You know, as I say to you, I agree with you. It's not a glamorous pick, and it's not normally the types of players that get, you know, those tough tackling midfielders or the leaders. But fair play to him for winning it. And who was that picked by? Was that picked by the Football Writers?
Just the journalist, yeah. Now, I've got an issue with the Football Association.
They love Liverpool.
Well, when in 1999, when United won the treble, they voted David Ginola as their Player of the Year.
In what year?
99, when United won the treble. He was at Spurs.
Yeah, but Ginola was amazing, though, wasn't he? Come on, Ginola was amazing. Come on.
Was he better that year than Keane, Beckham, Andy Cole, Dwight York, Giggs, Yap Stam, Peter Schmeichel. No, well, he wasn't.
Well, no, hang on. That's not what it's about, though. It's about that's a collective. They won a lot of trophies. They won the treble.
They won everything.
It's very hard to beat that. Yeah, but as an individual player that season, was he individually the best player in the league? And probably he was.
His team finished eighth. Irrelevant.
Just the accent, the hair flow, and he was a joy to watch.
Sorry, are you officially like coming out for David Ginola?
I'm swooning over David Ginola on the Head and Shoulders advert.
Is this a Dome Patrol United exclusive?
Oh no, it wasn't Head and Shoulders, was it? Was it like L'Oreal or something?
I've not got a clue. Anyway,
I've got the posters somewhere in the attic. I'll have to dig them out.
We've gone very much off topic there. Right, so let's wrap this up.
So right. Henderson can have it anyway. Henderson, right, okay. Klopp, yeah, whatever.
Okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who did you go for?
Kevin De Bruyne, and then Chris Wilder was my manager of the year, because what he did with Sheffield, they fell away at the end of the year, but what he did with that team, you know, they almost got into Europe. That's pretty special for a team with that budget, who haven't been in the Premier League for years, unheralded players. You know, he's worked miracles there. And a sneaky little outsider one is the Southampton manager. They were in trouble. They got beat 9-0 at home by Leicester earlier on in the season, and it would have been very easy to sack him. But I'll tell you what, since the restart, they've been one of the better teams.
Yeah, been really impressed with Southampton. And as a Southampton fan, though, I'd be really like, I mean, I'd be chatting to Tom in the WhatsApp group about Southampton. He's a big Saints fan. But it's that ambition that Southampton have got. This seems to be this business model that they use. It doesn't scream to me wanting to break into the top six or the top four. And they've got the scouting system to do it. You've only got to look at the players they've had over the years, Bale and, you know, all these players that have come through, just like Mane. They've had quite a lot of top quality players, but they just seem to sell them on. And
to Liverpool.
To Liverpool. So I think, you know, Southampton's attitude, you've got to take your hats off to the players. And that was a discussion we could have had as well about, you know, which teams have reacted better to empty grounds. And Southampton love playing in an empty stadium. So maybe the crowd doesn't do them good. And Everton have been the worst, I think. So maybe Everton need the crowd to rally them. Maybe that's part of our... you know, part of how we beat teams. Southampton, I've been really, really impressed with their energy, and Danny Ings has been nearly pipped the golden boot as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Right, so final one, and this is very early to be doing this. We may revisit it closer to the start of the season and at different points midway through next season. And whilst we don't know exactly the team that are going to be promoted in the playoff places, what I want from you now, and I'm going to write it down so we're going to keep a record of it, is next season, your top six in order and your bottom three, not in any particular order in the bottom three. So your top six and your bottom three.
Okay.
Whichever one you want to do first. And I am writing this down so we can keep track of it. And I'll ask Ben the same as well so he can be in this.
Okay. So the number five and six are going to be like someone sneaking in maybe or having a really good season. Because I've got the top four in my head.
Yeah.
Kind of got an idea what that... Okay.
I'll give you mine first.
Okay, I've done my top six. Go on then, what's your top six?
My top six. City are going to win the league.
Yeah.
Liverpool will be second.
Yeah.
United will be third.
Okay.
Chelsea will be fourth.
Okay.
Spurs will be fifth.
Yeah.
Wolves will be sixth.
Okay.
Notice a team missing.
Okay, well, I've got...
Notice a team missing there?
Yeah, Tottenham.
No, they're fifth.
Oh, you got Tottenham in fifth?
Yeah. We discussed them earlier on.
Arsenal.
Yep.
Okay. I've gone for City to win the league.
Yeah.
I've gone for Liverpool second.
Yeah.
Chelsea third.
Yeah.
Man United.
Yeah.
Tottenham, Arsenal.
Okay. So not too many differences there then.
So swap Chelsea and Man United rather than put Arsenal in for Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So your bottom
relegation. Okay. Who's coming up?
Leeds and West Brom.
And one of Swansea, Brentford. Cardiff, Brentford or Fulham.
Fulham, yeah.
Okay. So I fancy Fulham to come up and go back down. Okay. I think Brighton are a funny team because Brighton, I'd love to see Palace go down. They annoy me. Brighton's a funny one, aren't they? Because Brighton could have a really poor season next year. Could absolutely just, you know, not smash it, but you know what I mean? They play some good football, Brighton, and pick up some big results when they need to. They're a bit of a stayer, Brighton.
Yeah.
With Fulham, West Brom have got Bilic, haven't they? So they'll
So Fulham are going down then, yeah?
Yeah, Fulham next year. So
say Fulham don't win the playoffs. Are you putting the playoff winners in that same place?
Yes. It'll be one of Swansea, Cardiff, Fulham or Brentford to go back down again. I'd like to say Brighton, but I think West Brom and send all the championship teams down again. That's not what I don't want to do. West Brom and Leeds might stay up. Leeds probably just about, I think, in the first season. Let's go for West Ham if they're not careful.
Yeah.
Because they're a horror show sometimes, aren't they? Yeah. That's a bit of a long shot, that West Ham, I think.
I've got a long shot in mind, isn't West Ham as well.
Okay. All right. You're probably going for like a Burnley or someone then.
Boom. Yep. I think Burnley are gone next year.
Because of the way Dyche is at the moment, he's umming and ahhing, isn't he, where he's... Yeah, I wrote Burnley question mark. Yeah. Do you know what? I'll take... I'll kind of pinch that one off you then.
So you're going playoff winners, West Ham and Burnley, yeah?
Right, no, take West Ham out and put Brighton in.
Brighton.
Fulham, Brighton, Burnley. Yeah, I'll stick with that.
Okay, so I've gone for Burnley, West Brom and the playoff winners.
Right, okay. Okay. I think with West Brom, Bilic has got Premier League experience. He's been in the Premier League and managed before, and he has managed in the Prem before, hasn't he?
Yep.
Bilic. And played. I think West Brom will be harder to beat next year than say Brighton will. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think they're going to be a tough defending team, West Brom, and we'll probably just stay up with the most boring football known to man. But it'll work, and Brighton will try and attack and be like fancy, like they sometimes try and do, and it'll backfire. That's what I'm hoping. So yeah,
right. So that's our way. That's our way too early predictions, which we will revisit. Probably, I don't know, maybe in October, we'll revisit.
Not just Scousmas sticks with his predictions. Yeah. You know this. I ain't changing.
We'll revisit them and see how we get on. Right. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up, mate?
No, I think it's been good to get the season done and dusted, and we can look forward now to hopefully a healthier, happier future. I've got a busy couple of weeks coming up in hospital on Sunday for the baby. That's like booked in, made an appointment to have a baby. We'll see you on Sunday.
Sunday. Next time we speak on this podcast, you will be responsible for a human being. That's quite a scary thought, isn't it?
Yes, unless my wife's killed me before that, which is also a high possibility. I will be, that's a very scary thought. But I managed to keep the dog alive for like 6 years. He's fine. So that's
there you go. The kid will be no problem then, no problem.
Yeah. I just want to give a quick shout to my mate Louis in El Paso, who's a listener as well in Texas. He's a big Evertonian, listens in on all the podcasts. So, big shout out to him. And just, yeah, thanks for having me on again. It's been a really enjoyable season, and I'm sure we've got the Saints to talk about soon and,
yeah,
and stuff
well,
like that to be getting on with.
Training camp starts on Tuesday for the Saints. So, yeah, we're soon going to have NFL to talk about as well. So it'll be good, mate.
For the listeners who are made up now because they won't have to hear my dulcet scouse tones for the next few months, unfortunately, you're stuck with me because I just annoy you daily or
whenever. Hourly.
Minutely if I can. So unfortunately, you're stuck with me in the off season and future.
That's all right, mate.
The listeners get a break.
Yeah, there's a mute or a block where I can just kick you out of the group again. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, that'll be my 10th time in the move from the group, just to let all the listeners know. Yeah, he's got it in for me. But yeah, so good to speak to you, mate. And anyway. All good.
Yeah, great. Thanks for stepping in on short notice again due to Ben's weird working patterns. Mate, it was good to catch up and talk football again, and hopefully we'll be able to do that when the season starts. So, right, everyone, thanks for listening. Please make sure that you follow the Dome Patrol UK and the Dome Patrol US on Twitter. This podcast will be available on all of your podcast apps, Spotify, Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever, wherever you get your podcast from, that's where you find. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you again in September. Cheers.